illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, well, we have with us this evening a very, very special guest and good friend, Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist and who certainly has been a great help to me and to Radio Liberty as he brings us messages about the health. So many of our listeners are interested in understanding why Americans are so much sicker than people in other countries. Now, you may not realize that, but a recent study comparing health for men, I think it was 54 to 65 or 55 to 64 in both Great Britain and in the United States, comparable age groups, comparable people, comparable smoking, found almost twice as much cancer and diabetes and half again as many heart attacks and strokes in the Americans as the people in Great Britain, and nobody ever asked why. Well, here to answer that and many other questions is our good friend Bill Sardi. Hi, Bill. How are you doing tonight?
Great. More doctoring, of course, less chance you have of living as long and healthy as you might think. There's something wrong. Of course, the British system has proven that every time there's a doctor strike, where the mortality rate goes down. So, more care, less more side effects, and certainly you have to be careful about what you say so you're not being unfair to doctors and certainly conscientious people in the healthcare industry. But it is true that properly used prescription drugs administered by a nurse in a hospital, not the ones used in your home, end up causing over 100,000 people to die needlessly every year in the United States due to the side effects from the drugs. Now, of all the things, Public Citizen, which is the Ralph Nader Group, has brought this to light in the sense of you can subscribe to their little newsletter, and they have the Unsafe Drugs book and so on, and they try and tell you that virtually every drug that's on the market is, well, thought to be FDA approved, but a great many of them simply have never been proven to be safe because they can't do the safety study when it goes onto the market. They do an effectiveness study because they'll maybe prove a medicine is effective to use in 1,000 people. But when something is used in hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of people, that's only when you can tell how safe it is. So it might be 5 years later that you can find out that a drug is really safe, and therefore Public Citizen has been trying to say for some time that maybe we shouldn't be using any new drugs. And of course this is exactly what happened to Celebrex and Vioxx and the anti-inflammatory COX-2 inhibitors found to increase the risk of death, and then when that became apparent, why the FDA never told us, and neither did the drug company. So this has been the tragedy of it all. Tonight we're going to investigate dietary supplements. Are they safe? Are they effective? What can we say about those?
Well, I think that we see a conscious, organized, orchestrated effort by Organized Medicine, by the Wall Street Journal, and by the various vehicles of the establishment to convince us that, oh, vitamins really don't do you any good, you know. They can actually be harmful. Vitamin D doesn't do any good. And there is a conscious effort to try to discourage us from trying to take care of our own health. And I think that an awful lot of people are going to die because of that. We'll be right back. Well, Bill, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
It's interesting that on one of the journals that I was reading, they did a little survey of college students. And they were asking them whether they had any confidence in dietary supplements, vitamins, and so on. A lot of young people do take them even in college, mostly to keep performing while they're in college or maybe for athletics or what have you. And, of course, so the young people are fairly familiar with them as well. And, of course, the issue is what do young people think, what college students think about dietary supplements. And of course the survey showed that they were just kind of wary of dietary supplements. Maybe they weren't so sure that they were safe at all, certainly had very little confidence in them. And it kind of shows that the next generation is certainly not convinced. And they may think they're pretty smart, but they're certainly not convinced that dietary supplements are safe. And we're wondering if they're following or falling for the same pseudoscience and misinformation that everyone else is. And, of course, this is, of course, a great concern that we have. And when we're trying to, of course, share with people some information, it's odd that the young people would get fooled with this as well, and it seems to be kind of what's going on these days. So what we hear is unsafe dietary supplements, an unregulated dietary supplement industry, and, of course, we can't be sure of the ingredients in there. In any of the pills. Now, there's some truth to that last part in the sense of dosage, at least, and sometimes even the material itself. But when we look at the dietary supplements and then compare them, the gold standard, of course, that everything is held against are the drugs that are, quote, FDA approved. And as we let off this hour's report, trying to tell you that most of the drugs that have gone through the FDA process, the FDA has not required over 1,000 different drugs, has never required the pharmaceutical companies to complete the safety arm or the safety segment of their studies. The effectiveness part was proven, and by the way, if a drug is proven to work in just a few more people than what would be by chance, then everyone is supposed to take it that has a certain condition. And so let's say that...
Hold that thought right there, Bill, because we're going to have to just bring other stations back on board, but I think that this is so vitally important. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're talking about the way that these drugs are actually accredited, and, you know, they'll do these large studies, and they will find out that, let's say, if you take this drug, why 10% of the people are going to die. If you don't take the drug, why 12% of the people are going to die. And so they'll say, well, see, you know, like, my goodness, this is, a 50% improvement in morbidity or mortality. This is a wonderful drug, and yet you're only talking about a couple of percent, but they can juggle those figures around in such a way that, most people just have no idea what they're talking about unless you really sit down and analyze those studies, and the average person, the average doctor is not going to do that.
Well, if a medicine is going to work in 3 out of 10 people, that's good enough to get it put onto the marketplace. Now, that means 7 out of 10 will get no benefit, but the doctor will prescribe it for you anyway and never tells you that it's unlikely or certainly less likely than it is likely that drug's going to work for you. And this is happening now right now in cancer therapy. We give an anti-folic acid drug called 5-FU. It's an anti-folate drug, we call it. And it's the standard therapy for many cancers, particularly colon cancer. And yet only 20% of the patients have a form of cancer, of colon cancer, that's sensitive to the folic acid blocking type of a drug. So therefore, the other 80%, and by the way, the side effects of these drugs are terrible, and you go through all this suffering for no gain whatsoever. And so you never told any of this. Cholesterol drugs, we pointed this out. This comes from the medical letter, a distinguished review publication, and they're pointing out that maybe 3 out of 100 people who take cholesterol statin drugs are going to benefit by avoiding a heart attack. The other 97 people are taking it will never have a heart attack, and of the 3 who did benefit, they benefited by avoiding a heart attack, but not a mortal heart attack. In other words, the death rate didn't go down. The mortality rate is still about the same. So the doctor will look you straight in the eye and say your cholesterol number is up a little high, 260, 280. Your LDL is above 130 or so, and therefore it's time for you to think about a statin drug, which is an artificial way to lower your cholesterol, an abnormal way, by causing a liver malfunction, which is where the cholesterol is made. Now, we know the liver is critical. We know that if you have elevated liver enzymes, they want to know if you have liver disease, hepatitis, or something like that. But it's okay for a statin cholesterol drug to raise your enzyme levels in the liver, and then you have to be frequently tested. And then you may have other side effects. Now, the number they use, they always say the statin drugs, the benefits outweigh the risks. But the benefit is a relative number. They say that it is 30% drop or decline in the mortality rate. Well, first thing is, it's less than 1%, but on a relative scale. So let's just say that 7 out of 10 people would... 10 out of 10 people would get a heart attack, and let's say it's only 7 out of 10, so that looks like a 30% jump drop, but it's actually 3 out of 10 would be 30%. But if we're using different numbers, like a half a percent versus 1%, well, that sounds like a 50% difference, doesn't it? Well, a half a percent and 1%. So let's say that you drop the mortality rate by from 1% to a half a percent. That's a 50% relative drop, but it's only a half a percent, or one out of every 200 people who would benefit. So you have to watch carefully in diseases of which there's a very low incidence, and that's where they get away with these relative numbers, and that's what how they say it is with cholesterol, that there's a decline of 30%. But it's a relative number in hard numbers. It's less than 1%. And in fact, the first cholesterol drug, Mevacor, which came into use in 1987, continued to be used and openly stated in the medical literature that it wasn't dropping the mortality rate until they made it more toxic to the liver. And then, of course, they could show a little bit of a decline, but it was this statistical decline only. And, of course, you're falling for this doctor who, well, you have no gumption, you can't stand up to the doctor, you don't want to disappoint him, so you can't continue to take the medicine. But doctors should be, a lot of very conservative doctors simply don't go along with this cholesterol drug theory. And you need to find one of those doctors. And that's one of the complaints that drug companies have, is the doctors aren't, quote, following guidelines. And now we see that the doctors, you got a report from me, I think, Dr. Stan, of a large physician group which was involved in making a recommendation, I believe, on hypertension. And now they've lowered the numbers even further. And, of course, it came out that the drug companies had given $700,000 to that organization, but it was never disclosed. So why was it never disclosed? And, of course, they can lower the numbers, then we get to start the medications at a lower number. And, of course, this is what's going on. But remember, the fingers are being pointed at the dietary supplement industry, and that's because, of course, the drug industry is faltering. Vioxx on down, they're showing some decline in sales, and they're afraid that the consumers are going to find the dietary supplements are every bit as good and safer, and, of course, they don't want them running there. So when we say that the dietary supplement industry isn't regulated, let's deal with that a second by saying that simply you wouldn't even need any regulation. It's true, you could kill some people and harm them, but it wouldn't last long. You'd have product liability suits, you'd be out of business, insurance companies wouldn't insure you anymore, and you would certainly be out of business. So the marketplace would handle itself, though some people initially might be harmed. Well, what do we have here in the drug arena? We have the FDA covering for the drug companies. A drug like Vioxx, one of the FDA's own people had to leave the country, go to Britain to announce that there are four or five major drugs causing death and morbidity in the United States, and the FDA wouldn't tell us. It was one of our own FDA people, a very brave man, David Graham. So you see, the system we're using, the gold standard to compare against, is certainly no system that works. It's no system that's protecting us. And meanwhile, we look at the Poison Control Center data and can't find deaths due to dietary supplements, certainly not the multivitamins, which they recently criticized. And we do have about 30 deaths that were occurred with ephedra, the weight loss herb. But again, a court reviewed all this and said for the properly used ephedra, that no one could ever prove that it should have been taken off the market. But nonetheless, you can't get that herb today. And of course, now we see some of the weight loss drugs being taken off the market. Public Citizen saying some others should be taken off the market. They're causing people to die.
And of course, they allow Ritalin to be used. Ritalin has led to heart attacks as well, and yet they're selling that millions of it. You know,
that's exactly right. Ritalin being a stimulant now, and again, you'll overstimulate the heart. So, ephedra is like drinking 5 or 6 cups of very stiff Turkish coffee. You certainly have that issue of overstimulating the heart. You want to try drinking that much coffee and that's very strong, you'll see your heart start fluttering too. So the issue is they're allowing these weight loss drugs to be on the market. It's okay if they kill you, and by the way, they'll just add a black box warning. That means it's your fault for taking it. But if it's a ephedra, where's the black box warning to keep it on the marketplace? Oh no, we can't have that. It has to be taken off the market. You see, the drug companies don't want any competition. I'm not excusing a drug that might have killed 30 people, and we certainly have to think that even if people misuse things, it shouldn't put them in their grave. But I think some of the herbal companies were a little too aggressive in their marketing, and also they should have put some things like magnesium and so on in their formulas, which relaxes the heart muscle. So even under overstimulation, it wouldn't have caused fibrillation and so on. But this is the kind of thing that's been going on. By comparison, I don't want to say two wrongs makes a right, and by comparison, most of the medicines are far more unsafe than the ephedra herb, which was taken off the market. And of course, we have to ask about the, they say with the cholesterol drugs, well, they do, the benefits outweigh the risks. Well, that's exactly what ephedra did. It was causing people to lose weight, and of course the risk of mortality from being overweight, from diabetes and other conditions. And for the few people who died, oh no, we couldn't have that on the market, but it's okay to have statin drugs and other drugs on the market, which the statistics they use are phony. And of course, this is the kind of duplicity that you have. Your referee certainly knows this. The man with the whistle is the Food and Drug Administration, and they're in league with the pharmaceutical companies. So here you are taking the drugs, and then as soon as you hear about a dietary supplement, you'll call that company up and you'll say, you know, do your vitamins interfere with my medicines? And you don't even realize that you are saying that something that's essential for your life, vitamins and minerals, interfere with something that's artificial, synthetic, and problematic, drugs. And, you really need to have it the other way around. Do those drugs interfere with my nutrition?
And I think it's so important for people to realize that statin drugs actually suppress the CoQ10, which can, low in CoQ10, which is an essential enzyme, why, of course, you can get heart failure, get all sorts of muscle problems. The statin drugs lower the cholesterol, and people will have mental problems and depression. Certainly, they'll have problems as far as producing sex hormones are concerned. And does this play some part in the real problems we have in a lot of people as far as sexual function is concerned? You know, there are all sorts of complications about statin drugs, but all they ever do is look at the numbers and say, you're great. Why, we've got you down to 170 or 160. Isn't it wonderful? Well, Bill, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, we continue to see this insult, and of course the public's too busy. We're out making a living, taking care of our children, driving the kids to school, and in doing the things that we need to do, and of course we hope someone's looking out for our welfare and safety. It isn't the Food and Drug Administration. And of course in this last few days we've seen some sort of a issue about aspartame. Now this is your NutraSweet doesn't cause cancer. Clear bill of health. Don't worry about it anymore. And, of course, so we're barraged with all this kind of thing. The odd thing was, is the study they're talking about was unpublished, so that means it wasn't peer-reviewed, and it got released out here with widespread headlines. How did it get in the headlines? Why did nobody criticize it? You almost can't find the criticism.
And, of course, we know, of course, in all the animal studies, why aspartame did produce a marked increase in brain cancers, for that matter. And there are all sorts of complications from NutraSweet and from this line of medications. And the only reason it was actually released on the public was because Donald Rumsfeld, back in 1980 and 1981, was a key person on the Reagan transition team, and he simply put his people into key positions, overrode 15 years of objections from the Federal Drug Administration, and released a deadly poison on the people. NutraSweet, you know, breaks down into methanol and all sorts of really very dangerous products. They know that. They know that it is a carcinogen. One article going out there, they hope, of course, you'll read that, and you'll ignore all the rest of the material, but anybody can go up on the Internet and get a Betty Martini's websites, and she has all the scientific studies from people who spent 15 or 20 years studying the deleterious effects of NutraSweet that they're using to poison our children across America today.
Well, of course, the Calorie Control Council, which is part of the American Dietetic Association, came out with this study, which was really a survey of AARP, the Retired Persons Association, a study which exonerates aspartame from causing cancer. But Dr. Kenneth Stoller said, no one in their right mind, this is his quote, no one in their right mind, unless they get payola, sends out a press release on their data before the journal they wanted it published in has a chance to evaluate the study. In other words, they sent it out without the peer review. No one would want it once it's been released, you know, in the public, which is what Dr. Stoller is saying. It would be a worthless piece of trash, he said, that couldn't get published. So why not take some payola from whoever, he says, and make hay while the sun shines on their slimy little behinds, he writes here. Well, of course, it's plain language, folks. What they did was the 10-year-old study was an epidemiology study. That is, they study a population with just a survey of 6,000, let me see how many people they had in it, quite a few thousand. The point is, they had 56 questions in this survey in asking about the diet, beverages, various things that aspartame might be in. Now, wouldn't you think that in there they would have a question about aspartame? Only one of the 56 questions even dealt with it. I mean, this is just a trumped-up study, and you read that aspartame, clear bill of health.
Hold that thought right there, Bill, please. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is a health journalist, Bill Sardi. We're talking about this study that came out recently. It was not peer-reviewed. It was not a published article. It was a 10-year-old article. It was basically based upon a study questioning people about the sort of things that they drank and diet drinks. Didn't even mention aspartame, and yet after, based upon this, and one question, why they said there's no evidence that aspartame produces cancer. Well, I will tell you there's all sorts of animal studies, controlled animal studies, that show that it does. That should make it, of course, according to the Delaney Amendment, never to be used for human beings. If it produces cancers in animals, why wouldn't we think it would produce cancers in human beings? But that is never mentioned because there is one of the greatest covers-ups of all time, covering up the poisonous effect of the water fluoridation, of the NutraSweet, of the mercury that they're giving so many of our people, and they're still giving it in their influenza vaccines. That's why they're making such a big issue of everybody's got to get their influenza shot. Why? because you wouldn't be getting the mercury. We couldn't give the large doses of mercury to pregnant women, so it would localize in the minds of the child, on the brain of the child forming within her. But pick up the story there, Bill. Don't let me get started, because it's so infuriating when you see these people turning their back totally on the scientific method and, of course, putting out material that is aimed at deceiving the public. But more than that, of harming the public.
Well, the public needs an answer as to why. Now, we're getting lost in the details. Aspartame doesn't cause cancer. Dietary supplements aren't safe. Drugs aren't whatever. The point is that industry has, of course, bought off the politicians, the referees, and the Food and Drug Administration, the Centers for Disease Control, and the National Institutes of Health. And so we have this cabal along with the news media. And by the way, you know, the news media has a wonderful way of possibly profiteering from a great deal of this information, because they're the one group in the whole country that is allowed to have insider information, I mean, on Wall Street. Because the Wall Street Journal or the Journal of American Medical Association or whatever prestigious journals there are, the journalists receive what we call tear sheets, or you know, the early editions without the covers are sent to the journalists. Now, they may have these in their hand 10 days, 12 days before a news story is to break. Now, you've got a wonderful news story that a new medicine is going to, of course, hit the market and be approved by the FDA, or has a new approved use or whatever. Now, the statistics may be marginal, but you can hype this up, call it a blockbuster, say it works more, exaggerate, and then tell your uncle and your wife and everyone else to buy stock. And no one looks, no one goes to see if these people, of course, what do you think greedy people do? You think that they don't want to hype this and then get the stock price to go up, and they knew about it 10 days before. The journalistic industry has no barriers there. They can get away with what they want to, and they have insider information. I say that it's a possible, certainly I went to journalism training in college, so, you know, I trained as a journalist, so all I can say is there's no oversight over any of this, and of course it makes us wonder a little bit. We do see the ethics problems at the National Institutes of Health. A great many of the PhDs and researchers there said they'd quit if they weren't allowed to own stock and have all this profiteering going on. And, of course, the Centers for Disease Control, located in Atlanta, is a giant city. And, of course, it's literally controlled by industry and, of course, vaccine manufacturers and others. And we just don't realize how the people that run these organizations are planted there. They're shills for these major drug companies and so on. You can look back through. The National Institutes of Health appointed a woman in charge of the National Heart Lung Association, so on, the division of the National Institutes of Health. And she's never even submitted an ethics report requiring her to list all of her conflicts of interest and so on. And she's still never been required to do that. We keep asking her, and she never keeps submitting it. So it's supposed to be online so you can investigate it, but, of course, it never gets published. So this is kind of what's going on in government today, and it's your health that's suffering for it.
And many times I'm afraid these people give corruption a bad name. And these people have a revolving door. They usually will go from government to industry, from industry to government. Can we really trust them with our health? And we can give you example after example where they've taken drugs off the market that never should have come off, or even food supplements and things of that sort, and they've left the things on, as they did with Vioxx, knowing full well it was killing people. You know, and we're talking about tens of thousands of Americans died unnecessarily because of Vioxx on the market. And poor old Dr. Graham, who told the truth, why he has become a pariah there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. Bill, go right ahead.
Now, we can go on with this. I'd like to get to some life-threatening things, and certainly anybody who's ever had a heart attack or may experience a heart attack. We have a special new report, a life-saving report. It's on my website at knowledgeofhealth.com. And as you know, the American Heart Association, certainly the cardiologists in the country are quick to tell you all the signs of a heart attack, the crushing chest pain, the shortness of breath, the breaking out in a cold sweat. All those are the signs. You dial 911 if you think you're having a heart attack. But they never tell you that most of the damage that occurs to your heart occurs after the heart attack when the circulation is restored to the heart as the blood vessels are opened up that may have occluded or blocked circulation to the heart. You have four arteries, the coronary arteries that feed the heart, and the areas of the heart that don't get circulation and oxygen through blood flow, of course, are going to have scar tissue and partly die off. But a great deal of the damage to the heart occurs when the circulation is reestablished. And, of course, nobody ever hears this. And what they do is they'll take a clot-busting enzyme, streptokinase, or aspirin, or one of the blood-thinning drugs, and then they'll try and reestablish the circulation of that part of your heart, which they're able to do. And, of course, as that occurs, there's more oxygen suddenly coming into that part of the heart muscle. And it's oxygen itself that causes what we call oxygen-free radicals or oxidative damage or rusting or damage to the tissue. And it's that, this is called reperfusion, when the circulation is reestablished to the heart. More than 60% of the damage to the heart muscle occurs at that time. Now, it's odd that for all the things we do, we've got the clot-busting drugs, we've got the way to establish this, we can even go up in those arteries and reopen them up with a little balloon or put what we call a stent in there. It's a little round pipe-like device that's able to keep it open, prop it open. But we have nothing literally to address reperfusion. Isn't that odd? That's the thing that causes most of the damage. And so a year after having a heart attack, a certain percentage of men and women will have another one during that time, and of course about 40% of the people will eventually end up with heart failure due to so much damage to the heart muscle, it's just not pumping well enough, and you've got heart failure. And so this...
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Bill Sardin. We're going to get right back to his subject of what you should do if you have a heart attack. But just before we get to that, let's go ahead and get your telephone number or at least your email and your websites out so people will know how to get in touch with you, Bill.
Well, the website is knowledgeofhealth.com, knowledgeofhealth.com. You'll see lots of free reports there and everything from autism to blood pressure. And all these reports, of course, are... well documented. We try to be a good reporter for you. We try not to have opinion without documentation, and we think we owe it to people who read the reports there. We're tonight talking about what do you do after a heart attack, and it's odd that most of the damage to your heart is caused after the heart attack, and they have no treatment for this. They have immediate treatment to restore the circulation, which is what, in effect, causes most of the damage as you get more oxygen there. Now, normally, oxygen being carried in the hemoglobin and red blood cells is balanced by your body making antioxidants to counter its effects. But when new, fresh blood enters the heart, that balance isn't there, and this is when you have the damage. Now, they tell us you've got a few hours when you can actually repair or actually... prevent this damage from occurring to the heart. Now, they've done studies over and over again. The thing that got my attention to this, a brand new study out of India, and doctors there showing just even in humans, this is a hard test to do in humans, but they did do it, and among 65 patients who had a heart attack, they just gave them 500 milligrams of vitamin C twice a day along with those clot-dissolving drugs that I told you about, and sure enough, it restored all the measurable parameters of the blood back to nearly baseline levels. I'm quoting from their study, strongly favors supplementation with vitamin C among post-heart attack patients. It's in the journal Molecular and Cellular Biochemistry. Just 2 500-milligram vitamin C pills. I'd take more than that, but they're trying to tell us that modern medicine doesn't even address this issue that causes most of the trouble, coenzyme Q10.
We seem to be having a little problem. That gets the hum's gotten away. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the heart muscle itself is losing energy, and, of course, coenzyme Q10 is made in the heart muscle itself, but not enough. And, of course, they did a study and found out that if you gave supplemental coenzyme Q10 after the heart attack, why, it reduces the oxidation and renders hearts resistant to reperfusion injury. That's just what we're talking about. That was a study of the American Journal of Physiology, Heart Circulatory Physiology of year 2000, volume 278.
Now, I think it's important for our listeners to understand that the reason vitamin C works is because it's an antioxidant, a very powerful antioxidant. Would that be right?
That's correct, and you're having oxidation or free radicals as oxygen comes in, so it's countering that. It's the same thing with the coenzyme Q10. The same would be true for magnesium. It's another mineral, but it actually works as an antioxidant. It actually thins the blood so you don't get the clots. And the careful analysis now shows that we really should be giving some magnesium after the heart attacks. Of course, what modern medicine did a few years ago is they knew magnesium was threatening the streptokinase, the use of streptokinase, the enzyme, to open the, get rid of the clots, break up the clots. So what happened was is that they did a magnesium study. Again, they released this to the news media without it being published, and they infused the magnesium so fast into the patients at an irregular rate, very rapid rate, and that caused the heart muscle to become flaccid, and a few of the patients succumbed, and then they said, magnesium can kill you, and then they got rid of that, and of course they won't use it. But many, many smart doctors today still infuse magnesium at the proper rate of administration intravenously after a heart attack, and of course it wouldn't be such a bad idea to take orally, because orally you can't overdose on it. And of course this is what you should do. And then, you know, there's a remarkable miracle here, waiting for everyone that can hear it, and that is exactly how the molecules in red wine work. And of course, the molecule, we've talked about it here in the air before, resveratrol. You don't need to drink red wine and have the alcohol, you can get resveratrol pills. But the point is that they found out miraculously, especially in the last year or two, is that resveratrol preconditions the heart and the brain from strokes and heart attacks. What we mean is that it puts the tissues and the muscle tissues in the heart and the neurons in the brain on alert. They're on special alert. They are making, they're rapidly repairing their DNA. They're on rapid repair schedule, and they're making more natural antioxidant enzymes in the tissues already, so that if an event occurs, it's as if nothing happened. And this is called something called preconditioning, and this is why we believe the French may be having heart attacks but suffering no ill effects from it. If you can imagine this, this is exactly what this red wine molecule called resveratrol does. And, of course, there's resveratrol pills out here. I played a role in introducing one brand of them. But the issue is that we should be learning from this. Modern medicine has nothing for reperfusion injury. It's causing most of the damage to your heart attack. If I was to make a list for you tonight, and I said, why don't you just get a little bag or box, and you might be in some remote place camping or fishing or on an airplane or vacationing in a foreign country or some place where the paramedics can't get to you fast enough. And after all, even at home, you're just relying on the paramedics to be available. They may not be. And what harm could it be? There's over 1 million heart attacks a year, 1.2 million. Half of the people that have a heart attack survive. Now, if you can start taking vitamin C and E, little magnesium, coenzyme Q10, what harm could there be? it couldn't harm you. I mean, some patients have a heart attack, they're throwing up, they're not feeling well, and so on. So maybe it'll be difficult to administer this, but most of it, men are having the chest pain and the shortness of breath and so on. And what's interesting is what the paramedic will give you if you're in serious trouble, certainly what the emergency room physician will, is he knows there's a clot that's occluding one of the vessels or more going into your heart. They need to break up that clot. So they give you this enzyme intravenously, or they inject it straight in, the streptokinase. Now, what's interesting is there's a little enzyme that you can go get down at the health food store, and that is natokinase, N-A-T-T-O, kinase, K-I-N-A-S-E. And natokinase is an innocent little soy cheese enzyme. Natokinase lasts from 4 to 12 hours in its action in your body, breaking up blood clots. Hey, that's wonderful. Streptokinase works for only a few minutes and costs $800. Natokinase costs a few dollars and works for hours. And, you know, I'd have it around. And I'm just telling you that I have my little kit. So if I'm in the car or wherever I am, you know, if I survive one of these events, I'd sure love to be able to start taking right away to protect the damage to my heart tissue, especially since modern medicine has nothing that does this. So you may follow your doctor's orders, but you're going to end up with terrible heart failure, and you may succumb a year after your heart attack after you survived it, all unnecessarily because they never addressed reperfusion injury and, of course, the importance of you protecting your heart from the reestablishment of circulation of both blood and oxygen to your heart, making the free radicals damage the tissues until the balance between free radicals and antioxidants can be reestablished. So remember, if you've had your heart attack, you can do this for up to hours after the heart attack, and it would still be beneficial. So I just leave this for you. It's a difficult thing, and you may say, well, I have to leave myself to the hands of the emergency room physician, and certainly that may be true. Certainly the person experiencing this may be in no condition to be able to take anything, so it might be a little difficult. But even throwing a vitamin C pill under your tongue, or a vitamin E capsule, or a coenzyme Q10, any of these things may be beneficial to you. A little magnesium, just throw it under your tongue if you think you're having a little chest pain and so on. And of course, a lot of people here take an aspirin tablet. Well, that's true. I'm not a big fan of taking an aspirin every day. It depletes your folic acid and vitamin C and iron. And of course, some people are resistant to it. It doesn't even work. And it seems to lose its effect over time. But if you're just taking it freshly, and it's as strong as any blood thinning drug, and of course you're trying to get the clot to break up, so it might help you to have a little aspirin tablet around if the event occurs, the crushing chest pain, and, of course, the shortness of breath and so on. So, you know, it helps to have a little kit around. We kind of outline it on our website at Knowledge of Health, and be ready and know what to do. So half the public is going to survive one of these events. By the way, the other half who don't survive a heart attack, most of those people have normal cholesterol, normal to low cholesterol, and the cholesterol theory has nothing to do with their heart attack. We've explained this before. Why do the blood clots occur? Because you have low vitamin C levels. The collagen that makes up the thickness of the wall of your blood vessels has simply become thin, and the blood vessel, the artery, coronary artery, collapses, and that causes the clot behind it. So, you know, we frequently tell people you need to be on vitamin C. Now, it's interesting, the animals don't get that form of a heart attack because they naturally make vitamin C all day long. Their liver produces it. We have a genetic enzyme. We lost the ability to make this enzyme. We have a genetic flaw to make this enzyme, and so that converts our blood sugar to vitamin C. So humans are genetically flawed. Don't do this like animals. Animals do not have the coronary blockage and heart attack typically that you see in humans. The one animal that does is the guinea pig, and of course he's in the same predicament as humans and doesn't make vitamin C. And by the way, they give the equivalent of 800 milligrams, the human equivalent, to guinea pigs to make sure that they don't get heart attacks, but they tell us in the United States all we need is 60 milligrams a day. So somebody's not leveling with us. If you want to keep from having a heart attack, keep your artery wall strong, take a little vitamin C, keep the fish oil there. If you want to, of course, be pre-prepared for a heart attack, if you're taking the vitamin C and the fish oil and coenzyme Q10, resveratrol, magnesium, all of these, if you're pre-taking them, it means that if you had a little heart attack, the damage would be very, very limited. You see, I think maybe we ought to be supplementing with these things before, but probably a lot of us are too timid. We want our doctor to recommend these things. So I'm just starting from the back end of it. What happens if it already occurred? What happens if you've already had a heart attack? I'd have these things around because you're prone and subject to having another heart attack. I'd certainly be taking these things every day, knowing that modern medicine has left the door wide open to reperfusion injury, which causes most of the damage to your heart muscle. Now, you probably never heard this anywhere else, and it's embarrassing that modern medicine can't come up with anything when the obvious antidote is to counter the free radicals. They're caused by oxygen, and the antioxidants, oxidant, that meaning like oxygen, are vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, and so on. So the obvious thing they refuse to use, cardiology is not given to take in vitamins. And you are going to have to wade through and figure out who's telling you the truth here tonight. And you may suffer, or loved ones may suffer, and it'll be very hard to convince them of what I'm saying. But you can go to my website, and it tells you what to do after you've had your heart attack. And I hope you're prepared. Get some vitamin C and E, coenzyme Q10, resveratrol, magnesium. You keep those handy. You might be using them every day, but I'd certainly be reaching for them. You probably put it under your tongue, even if you're struggling through a heart attack. Any of those things would start to help you. Certainly an aspirin tablet at the time of the event may break up the clot. We talked about a little enzyme, nattokinase, perfectly safe to use. And, of course, maybe the paramedics are out on another call and can't get to you in time. Maybe you're somewhere where the paramedic care can't get to you. And in that case, you need to do something quickly. You know, I'd be prepared. We can't rely on someone else to save our lives when we're not sure they're going
to
be there.
Well, let's go to Tom, who's calling in from Chicago. And somebody just called in and asked about glycerin. Is there any place for glycerin in something of this sort?
I haven't studied that. I imagine someone calling would think there is. I'm not aware of it, but I would have to look it up.
No, I wasn't either. Well, we've got Tom on the line. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Fine.
They're thinking of nitroglycerin.
Maybe that's what they're... Okay.
Yeah, and nitroglycerin dilates or widens the blood vessels, so certainly if you had it, why, of course.
Okay, fine. Tom, did you have a question or comment?
Got two questions for Bill. One is a person at 60 years old, I was told that if your blood pressure is 165 over 95, that you're in deep trouble. And I was wondering what he thought about that, and that's
okay,
what I
had. Let's just get that one question. He's 60 years old, and he's got a blood pressure of 165 over 95.
You can go to my website. If you can't get to the website, you can get somebody to print it out for you, and we try to explain the age-adjusted figures. As you get older, you can tolerate higher numbers without a risk for stroke. And by the way, 165... that's the 10-year risk, and it goes up, you know, a percent or two. What's the chance you're going to have the risk? Come on, I mean, if you're at 250 or 300, ooh, you're ready to blow the roof off your blood vessels. Okay, I understand. But, you know, these aren't particularly high numbers, and when you adjust for it age, you'll find the numbers are close to your numbers, and at 165, it's hard to say that I would put somebody on blood pressure pills. You can look at the age-adjusted numbers. UCLA did a wonderful study in revealing that most patients don't need to be on blood pressure medicines that are put on them when you adjust for their age. And, of course, those that's who has most of the hypertension in the country. They want your numbers, you to be on blood pressure pills at below 120 over 80 now. They have these new numbers, and here you are at 165. Well, I'd scratch my head and think about it again. The blood pressure pills have a lot of side effects.
They sure do. Hey, thanks very much, Tom. Let's go to Barbara calling in from Texas. Hi, Barbara. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Dr. Dan. Hello, Phil. I have a question about serrapeptase.
About what now?
Serrapeptase.
Okay, serrapeptase, again, anything with an ASE at the end is an enzyme. Any of these enzymes will probably work. I was giving you one because it's been well documented to work and is safe and has a long-lasting action, but...
That was natokinase?
Natokinase, or bromelain. I mean, it's...
Hold that thought, both of you, please, for just a moment here as we begin to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Okay, Barbara, let's see. Bill, you think that this is an enzyme of some sort? I've never really heard of that one.
Serrapeptase, it's sold in health food stores and so on. Any of these enzymes work. They're clot-busting. They don't cost $800. Bromelain is another likely one. These are all natural anti-inflammatory agents, by the way. And, of course, the bromelain is from, I believe, papayas. So the enzymes will work. And, of course, what we're trying to do is lyse, L-Y-S-E, or break or split apart a clot. Break it up into little bits. And, of course, that's what these are. These are lysing or clot-busting enzymes, and that's all they're doing for $800. It lasts a few minutes. You can use, any of these. We were just mentioning one because it's well-documented and safe to use. But they all are, basically, and I hope you all understand, the enzymes in your blood vessels, if you introduce these enzymes there, you're keeping the clots from sticking to the blood vessel walls. You're also keeping cancer cells from sticking to the blood vessel walls. That's how cancer cells begin to spread. So just taking enzymes, you would be blocking the metastasis of cancers, and you'd be blocking the clots that cause heart attacks. It's number one and two cause of death in the United States just by taking a little enzyme supplement.
Okay, Barbara, we're going to have to run because we've got one more call, and we're just about out of time. But thanks
Thank you very
for
much.
Calling. Bye-bye. Let's go to Charles, also calling from Texas. Hi, Charles.
Yes, sir. Can the guest mentioned L-tryptophan? L-tryptophan was something that really helped a lot of people that couldn't sleep, not even severe depression. It was a drug that was sold, and then all of a sudden it was taken off the market. The idiots in the federal government decided it was bad for you. And
But Charles, did you have a question at all? I agree with everything you said, and there was no reason to take that off the market. There was one company in Japan that put out a defective product that was genetically engineered, and as a result, they took it totally off the market. It was an excellent product. Did you have a question?
Yeah, is that the same thing you get when you heat milk? Or if you warm milk, you don't trip the thing. Is that true, by drinking warm milk?
Yeah, you have that, eating a little bit of turkey meat. It's in figs, peanuts, popcorn, things like that. You'll see some tryptophan. But,
do you have anything about diabetes? Has diabetes had anything you know that's a better cure than what our enemies want us to know
about?
Well,
in Europe, they use lipoic acid as the drug to cure diabetes. Here, it's a dietary supplement. Doctors never even mention it.
Okay, we're out of time, Charles, but thanks so very much. And, Bill, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always stimulating, and I'm looking forward to having you back again next month here.
Thank you again.
Good night, and God bless. And, again, that website is knowledgeofhealth.com. That's knowledgeofhealth.com, or Ask Bill Sardi. Go there, get the information. You'll benefit from it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when I really need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We really do depend on those of you out in the listening audience to help us as we try to reach out across America on 60 different outlets every week, and on many of these outlets where we're having to buy the time. So we really would appreciate your help and support, especially at this time when things have been a little bit slow. And then certainly we want to mention Dr. Russell Blaylock's wonderful book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, a great deal of wonderful information in that book. And then in his other two books we carry, of his, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, going into aspartame and NutraSweet, one of the worst poisons that's being given to the American people, produces pathological obesity. We hear all about all these people who have pathological obesity. They never mentioned that any animal you feed NutraSweet to gets pathological obesity. And then, of course, Dr. Blaylock's other book, The Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. That's Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. We recommend all of those books. We have a new health catalog, and we are actually carrying certain health products. They're made by one of the leading companies in the country, but they can't have their label, so we have our own label on it, the RL products, and we basically carry almost everything they mentioned tonight except this natokinase, and we probably will think very seriously about that. If you'd like to get a copy of our health catalog, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And many of these things we take ourselves. Now, we do not carry the resveratrol or Alamax. Both of those are products that you can get through Bill Sardi's website. But the other items we have, if you're interested in getting them, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Those of you who asked for a health catalog, they're going to be going out here the first of next week. We wanted to get everything organized, and we have listed all of our four tape sets. We've listed all of our videos. We've listed all of our various books on health, and then, of course, the Berkey products and the Miracle 2 products, but more than that, the various health foods that so many people are taking, and if you're interested in them, why, sometimes you really don't know what to take, or you don't know the doses on these things, you don't know how they work, well, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you along the health catalog, and then if you have other information, we'll be having Dr. Russell Blaylock or Dr. Carol Dean or Bill Sardi on a regular basis, because this information is so vitally important. We do have that great book on the statin drugs. It's a small little book, but it's got well-verified, well-documented information. We have a four-tape set on statin drugs. And if you're one of those people who's a victim of statin drugs and you sort of have that ache-all-over feeling, you don't feel good, or your mind isn't working quite right, why, you need to find out about statin drugs, one of the greatest scams of modern times. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com, and then of course we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, but please do not call in unless we ask for calls, because we have with us right now on the line Ron Brown, and Ron certainly supports Radio Liberty, and we support Ron Brown. We think he's a great guy. I've never met Ron. I feel like he's a friend. I talk to him on a regular basis, and of course he is in the gold and silver business, and we are entering some very, very difficult times as far as this country is concerned. I'm going to be speaking tomorrow over at the conspiracy conference. In fact, I'm the lead speaker there. I think that they put me in the morning because, well, probably most people won't be up by 8:30 when I'm going to begin speaking. But as I was going over what I'm going to be saying, I noticed that in my last speech, I'd actually mentioned that the Social Security Fund was going to start running out of money in just 11 years from now. In other words, they would not be taking in as much money as they were giving out, and so they were going to have to go to the Social Security Fund, that they have. But the only trouble, what does the Social Security Fund have in it? Does it have money, stocks, bonds? No, it has IOUs from the government. But the trouble is the government doesn't have any money. So if the government is going to actually provide money through Social Security, they're going to have to tax us to so that they can pay the Social Security. 11 years from now, in the year 2017, Social Security runs out of money, and Medicare won't be far behind that. None of these systems are working, and what are we doing? Why, with the new immigration law, we're going to set ourselves up for massive increase payouts of Social Security to illegal aliens who've come here and worked fraudulently, stolen somebody else's Social Security number, but, you know, we're such wonderful people. We're going to give them Social Security, too. Well, Ron, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan.
Well, tell us what's happening now. Certainly the gold and silver market was going up like a rocket, and then about 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, it just dropped like a rock, and now it seems to be sort of bouncing along down there at the bottom. What's happening?
Well, to really understand what's going on with gold and silver, one needs to understand the battle on the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar is gradually, step by step, being repudiated by the world. And, you know, just in early May, I think it was Russia, came out and said they were going to start pricing their oil in rubles. So they're going to try to disengage from the dollar. And, of course, what has given the U.S. the ability to spend beyond their means for all these many years is the simple fact that the United States dollar was the world's reserve currency. And as a result, all international trade basically is conducted in dollars, so all the countries in the world have to store many dollars to do their trade with, so that allows the U.S. to borrow money from them, because that's how they actually store their dollars, by buying U.S. bonds and treasury instruments.
And of course the thing is that that oil was sold throughout the world in dollars. And if you wanted to have oil, and you really have to have oil, why, you had to have dollars to buy the oil with. But what happens when the second largest oil exporter in the world, and soon to be probably the largest oil exporter in the world, and that is Russia? Russia begins to either use the euro or use the ruble as the medium of exchange. Russia is accumulating a great deal of money. Their reserves, somewhere of $240 billion of actual reserves that they're holding at the present time. And, of course, they're increasing their gold supply. They're going to have a stable currency, and what are we doing? We're giving our money away all throughout the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I'm often reminded of something that Cicero said. You know, he said that the balance should be budget, the budget should be balanced. Foreign spending should be reduced. The arrogance of the bureaucracy should be tempered. And assistance to foreign countries should be stopped, lest Rome become bankrupt. Well, of course, they didn't listen to Cicero. The Roman Republic was destroyed, and then they went into a dictatorship. And nothing has changed in the past. I mean, Rome did exactly what we're doing, or we're doing exactly what Rome did. We're spending money that we don't have. We are the largest debtor nation of the world today. We may be the most powerful military nation, but we're having to borrow about $2 to $2.5 billion every day. In fact, according to Bob Chapman, it's closer to $3.5 billion every day, just to pay our debts throughout the world. And you can't keep on doing this indefinitely. Eventually, the other countries get tired of lending you money, especially when the value of the money that you are going to pay back to them is going to be reduced, and the dollar is declining in value. In fact, it's down from 90. It was about 84, and of course, Bob Chapman seems to think it's going to go down to about 60 as the value of the euro, which is now probably around 128, 129, goes up to 160. And of course, we're going to see the progressive decline in the value of our dollar. And this is actually being encouraged by our leaders who say, look, if we can get the value of the dollar down, then our goods will be so much more competitive on the world market. But what they never tell us is that they are stealing the value of the savings of the American people. They're stealing the value of their annuities, of their bank deposits, of their bonds, of their CDs, of anything that is actually denominated in dollars, the value of their pension funds. And the American people aren't going to wake up until one day they suddenly wake up and find that the wealth that they've spent their whole life accumulating has been stolen from them. Would you agree with that, Ron?
Absolutely. In fact, everything you see happening with Russia switching trying to switch selling their oil in rubles to Iran, trying to switch to selling it in euros. All of this is just nations' attempt to quit, to get away from lending the U.S. billions and billions of dollars a year. And they're just trying to break away, but it's very difficult to do because for 20, 30, well, since World War II, actually, since the dollar became the world's reserve currency, the whole world has been tied into this dollar system, so everyone is sitting there with billions and billions or hundreds of billions of dollars in their treasury.
So hold that thought right there, Ron, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown, and Ron is just saying that the dollar has been a reserve currency for a long time, but people have forgotten that before the Second World War, the British pound was the reserve currency of the entire world, and everybody traded in British pounds. And then, of course, when the British pound, certainly was just got into all sorts of problems that couldn't be backed. And then, of course, the mantle of world leader, world financial leader, fell on the United States, and certainly the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1945. America became the leading nation in the world financially. And we've been in that position for about 60 years now, but I fear that the day of American monetary preeminence is gone. And I believe that countries throughout the world are trying to get out of dollars. Right now, one of the countries that has more dollars than anybody else is Communist China. Now, admittedly, Japan has more dollars than Communist China, but what a terrible position we are to be becoming increasingly dependent on the largest, on the support of Communist China for the economic survival of our nation. How did we get into such a mess?
Well, given any nation reserve currency status is like giving a credit card to a 19-year-old with an unlimited credit. He's just going to spend beyond his means because it's so easy to do, and that's what's been really available to the U.S. The whole world was standing in line to buy our treasury paper because they were all competing, needed desperately to trade with the United States. So for 20, 30 years, the whole world was basically orchestrating their currencies lower versus the dollar, so their products would be more competitive in the U.S. markets. But the way they did that was by dumping their bonds, whether it's the yen or the ruble or whatever into the market, using the proceeds of those bond sales to buy U.S. Treasury bonds, which means they've been financing our folly. So at some point, if you keep doing that year after year after year, I don't care who you are, your creditor ultimately will cut you off, and that's exactly what's happening to America right now.
But now, why then, of course, is gold and silver take such a big drop here just a couple of weeks ago? I mean, certainly gold was up around 730. It's down around, well, 640 at the present time. That's a considerable drop.
Well, it's really this simple. And I use the simple little analogy is try to picture all the creditors of the United States, whether it's the central banks around the world or the big industrialists or just pension plans or whatever. They've invested billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars, in U.S. dollar instruments. So they all have a vested interest in the dollar not collapsing. So try to picture all these creditors in the movie theater, each one of them sniff smoke, and they all know there's danger ahead, the dollar's in trouble. And they're all looking down at the front of the theater, and they see this itsy-bitsy little red sign that says exit. All of the creditors of the U.S. are thinking exactly the same thing. How in the heck do I get to that exit? How in the heck do I get out of dollars without creating a panic and a stampede? Because if everyone gets up and runs for the exit, the whole system collapses. That takes the world into a black hole depression, and no one benefits from that. So what I think we've been seeing over the last 4 or 5 years since the dollar peaked back in, 2001, was it? At 121 on the index. The dollar started going downhill very dramatically, and you and I have talked about it many times, how the dollar had dropped up to, 40% versus the euro. And when the dollar hit 80 on the index back in, 2002, I really believe the whole world had to come to the rescue. They had to come in and stabilize the dollar to keep it from going down a black hole, and they fought to prop it up for, 2 years. And the dollar peaked again at about 92 and change back right before Christmas, I believe. And then it turned over and started back down. In the last 2 or 3 weeks, the dollar was threatening to go through 80 again. It was all the way down to 83 and change. And I think, again, they're having to come to the rescue, stabilize the dollar a little bit, attack and ambush the gold and silver market, because gold and silver are just telling the world there's a crisis ahead. Whenever it goes up, that's what it's basically saying. So it's just the damage control. Nothing has changed.
I think it's really very interesting that we've seen the price of the basic commodities. We're talking about copper and zinc and nickel and certainly gold and silver. Although they're monetary, they're also can be considered commodities. And they're certainly all been going up. Copper's been very, very strong. All of these have been strong. They've backed off a little here recently. And yet there hasn't really any dramatic decrease in demand for that. Communist China, now that they have a middle class of about 300 million people, that's as many people as we have here in the United States, and that's the middle class over there in China. Now these people are wanting to buy cars and all the other things, and so China is going to be a great source of demand for all of these basic minerals. And I think, you know, as the dollar drops, the price of these things is just going to go through the roof. And what we're going to see is the Americans finding that the things we're buying are costing more and more and more, just like oil has had and the price of gasoline has had a tremendous impact on the average American home. And people are not driving as much, especially if they've got a big SUV or a big truck, something like that. I think we're going to see the same thing happening, you know, with so many other things that we use. And I really think that we're going to see Americans having to begin cut back on their buying. There was an article very interesting in the Wall Street Journal that said a lot of the big banks are in trouble because people now are not borrowing on their credit cards. They're beginning to pay off the money they owe on their credit cards because, of course, the interest rates are higher, and they're getting scared. And so they're beginning to cut down their debt, and here are these poor old bankers that have been making money hand over fist, and suddenly they're not going to make all the money on interest that they have in the past. Have you noticed that?
Absolutely. And you know, what we've been, you and I have been talking about, how long have I been coming on there with you, Dr. Stan? About 3 years now?
3 or 4 years, yeah.
It seems time flies when you're having fun, but we've been talking about how the whole world, China in particular, and India, they desperately needed to trade with the U.S. for years, but as we send all of our plants and technology overseas, they are now the producers of the world. they are now producing the middle class that you just alluded to, and as they do that, then they're the ones that need the new TV sets and refrigerators and all the things that Americans take for granted. So as China and Russia and India develop their own markets, then at that point they don't need us nearly as much as they have before. So now they can start to accelerate out of the dollars, which they, since they're not trading with us and we're being reputed as a reserve currency, then eventually that's their game plan. But they're trying to do it in such a way that they don't just put the whole monetary system on tilt.
I think it's so interesting that people do not understand that after the Second World War, 50% of our gross domestic product was manufactured. Today, 14% of our GDP is manufacturing, and that number is falling all the time. Why? Because there is an organized, orchestrated, subversive plan to transfer of the manufacturing and the better-paying jobs of our country to other countries, and to bring in to this country people with these H-2C visas so they can take the jobs and the better-paying jobs away from our people and give them to people who work for less. That's what a lot of the immigration legislation is about. And so the computer programmers and the architects and the other people who've, you know, had it pretty good here are going to find increasing competition as not only the jobs are leaving this country, you can get your architectural work or your legal planning done over in India very much cheaper than you can here. Their telephone answering service, much more efficient and over there than here in the United States. And so more and more of our good-paying jobs are leaving America, and it's happening rather slowly. And until people lose their job and then try to get another one, they don't realize what's happening. But they're gradually, intentionally grinding down the income and the living standards of our people. It's all part of a plan that was laid out in the Earth Charter, what Mikhail Gorbachev refers to as the new Ten Commandments for the world, where he calls for equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. In other words, that's the plan to raise the living standards of the average American to that of the Bolivian peasant. They know exactly what they're doing. They just can't let the American people know. And this is going to have a profound impact upon the lives of everybody listening to the program. And if you have not yet read the Earth Charter, you need to get it. You need to read it, especially Part 10A. The Earth Charter, the new Ten Commandments, written by three people deeply involved in the occult: Mikhail Gorbachev, the former dictator of Russia; Maurice Strong, the former director of the CIA, who was always behind the scenes, but he really ran it; and then, of course, Stephen Rockefeller, the son of Nelson Rockefeller. And if you've read his books, why, there'd be no question in your mind that where his loyalties lie. So, Ron, how are we going to awaken the American people before it's too late?
I don't know, Dr. Stan. Like you, I've been trying to do it for like the last 25 years of my life, and I don't know what it's going to take to get people to wake up. You know, if you'd have told me 24, 25 years ago, back in, let's say, 1980, 82, that our leaders could orchestrate taking all of our jobs and all of our technology and send it overseas, and at the same time create the illusion of massive prosperity that kept people happy, I'd have said it's impossible to do that, but that's exactly what they've done. And they've done it through bubble economics. They first created the bubble in the technology stocks, and people were making so much paper money on their investments that they didn't notice that all the jobs were being sent overseas. Of course, the last 5 years, it's been the real estate market that has deluded people into thinking we're in prosperity.
But I think, the good thing, and I hate to say this would be good, but as, of course, the stock market is going to begin to contract one of these days, the housing market is already beginning to contract, and I think people are going to have to be hurting financially before they're going to begin assessing what's really important. Beginning understanding that freedom, you cannot be free if you live in a managed economy, or when you have both political parties under the same control, and where you have people in positions of power who are intent upon destroying the stability, the economic stability of our nation. For the stability of a nation depends upon the stability of the currency, and we no longer have a stable currency. Well, Ron, go ahead, pick up the story. There's still quite a bit of interest among your customers, because I know the people who would be coming to you would be well aware of what's happening financially. And we hope that the number of people out there who are becoming aware that there's a real problem would be growing. Are you sensing that? Are you seeing new people, or mostly talking to your old-timers?
No, it's a lot of new people. And in fact, a lot of people that were kind of sticking their toe in the water the last year, two or three years, now coming back and realizing that this is serious, and they're just jumping in with both feet. So I think the business of all the gold dealers throughout the country is up 3, 4, or 5-fold from what it was, let's say, 2 years ago. So more and more people are catching on, and that's where this thing will start to run into trouble, because the reality is there's so little gold and so little silver out there relative to the amount of paper money that's been generated over the last 20, 25 years, that once the flight into gold and silver accelerates just a little bit, you're going to see shortages start to manifest. And I think that's what we're already seeing. You know, gold has gone from $500 right before Christmas, got as high as $729 just 2 or 3 weeks ago, and silver has had a like move. It's gone from $9 or so up to over 15. So the flight out of paper into gold and silver is starting to accelerate, and that's just going to, things are going to have to start happening very quick. It'll be very spastic, very violent, and things are moving a lot faster than they were 12 months ago.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly share your concern about what's going on, but I think it's going to take something like some major cataclysmic events before the average person on the street who lives so well, who honestly thinks he's going to get a pension when he retires, who thinks there's really money in the Social Security fund. After all, don't they have a Social Security trust fund? No, they don't have a Social Security Trust Fund. They got a drawer. It's got a lot of IOUs in it from the government. But nobody ever bothers to say that the government doesn't have any money. Where is all the government's money stored? There isn't any money that they've got stored. And that, of course, is the most carefully kept secret of all time. All you have is a lot of IOUs from a government that has no money. And 17 years from now, or maybe even sooner, when, of course, Social Security is putting out a lot more than it's taking in, where's the difference going to come from? And they're just simply going to have to raise taxes higher and higher and higher. Or my suggestion would be to raise the age of retirement to 85, and at that point, why, we might be able to get the system back to some sort of sanity. So anyway, I think that we're really going to be seeing some very, very difficult times financially, and we're talking, I don't think in the distant future, I think probably within the really coming months, we're going to begin seeing the effects of this planned program of sending our manufacturing overseas, sending our jobs overseas, and with this new immigration law, they're going to allow massive immigration into the United States. There will give many, many people, and we're talking about the people who are here illegally, they're going to give them amnesty. They're going to say, we're not giving them amnesty, we're just going to let them stay here and become citizens, but that's not amnesty. And, well, if that's not amnesty, what would you call it? You need to read this legislation. You need to realize we're being betrayed by the people within the United States Senate. And the only thing we can hope and pray for is that the House of Representatives refuses to accept the Senate's bill. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown. If you have a question or comment, you know, on what's happening to our country financially, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. It was just last night we had on Gus Delzer, who for 30 or 40 years had worked for General Motors and had seen this great, great company that, you know, he was so loyal to, and he was in charge of their sales force here on the West Coast for many years. And now we're seeing General Motors really teetering on the brink of actually bankruptcy. They have $300 billion in outstanding bonds that, you know, and when they calculate the value of the company, it's about negative $43 billion. They're transferring their major production facilities to China. Today, General Motors is the largest producer of vehicles in China. And second or third largest producer in South Korea, but they're not telling the American people that they're transferring out of this country and they're going to leave so many of their employees high and dry, who have been expecting to have health care and expecting to have pensions when they retire. And I think they're in for a terrible, terrible surprise. What are your thoughts, Ron?
Absolutely. You know, I've shared this quote many times on the air, but I think it bears repeating because it just kind of describes exactly what's happened to our country. And that is, back in the 70s, the trilateralist Richard Gardner, I remember, was the one I remember making this quote, but really all of them, you know, Zbigniew Brzezinski, were making very similar statements. And simply what they said is, what we must do is take an end run around national sovereignty, to erode it piece by piece, to raise the standard of living of the undeveloped countries of the world while we lower the standard of living of America so they can more comfortably emerge into a new world order. And let's face it, what we're in now is the merger process. That's what we're seeing as GM and these companies just start sending their stuff overseas. So, you know, they're talking about the Asian currency unit, which would give you one currency for the Asians. They're talking about the Amero, where you combine the U.S., Canada, and Japan for one currency, and of course we already have the euro in place, so they are slowly consolidating power, and now all they need is the right emergency, and then they can force their one world currency or world central bank on the world.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and so basically, do you think that they're going to be able to pull this off? Are they going to be able to create that one world currency?
Well, if you look at the scriptures, I don't think they ever get it complete, but they're going to wreak havoc on the world as they try. You know, I think they're going to collapse the U.S. system as we know it. You can already see it happening. It's unraveling as we speak. So the whole world is going to go into convulsions as they try to put this system together. My suspicion is that Asia will never go along with it, so that's where the bottleneck will come, and it'll, it's hard to picture exactly how it's going to unfold, but it's frightening where the world is heading.
You go right ahead. I've got to do a little work here, Ron.
Oh, okay. We were just talking about how they've been actually orchestrating this new world order for as long as I can remember. And, I just ask people, if you had taken that quote I just gave you and had that quote put into calligraphy and framed and put up on the wall right above your TV set, and every time you watched the TV, you looked at the events of the day and said, where do these events fit into this new, this strategy that they're talking about? And I think you'd see that's exactly what they've been doing, is step by step taking away the sovereignty and integrity and strength of the U.S., sending it overseas, building up the undeveloped countries of the world. Now they've just about got the U.S. down to a point where it's very vulnerable to a total economic collapse, and now we're in a position where when they pull the trap, we will have to accept their solution, which is a world central bank. You still there, Dr. Stan?
Yeah, Ron, go right ahead. I'm just trying to get the shortwave back on the air.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to let you talk to Rita. Just hang on here. Hey, Rita, do you have a question for our guest?
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is Rita. I had something. It's about financial, but it's also about America. And I thought that right now it's a good time to talk about one issue because we just had the new Hayden confirmed as the DCIA, and I want to get it straight so, you know, people, you know, if we use the language and we don't abuse the language, you know, there's a way out of the mess. He's the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. There's also something called the Director of Central Intelligence. That's the Director of Central Intelligence is appointed by our intelligence community. The intelligence community will say who the DCI is, right?
And I guess
we have our elected representatives, but they're not capable of observing our culture. You know, you talk about it I hear Rick Adams talk about it every day. You know, the people call in, they want to string those people up. Well, we just have to observe the culture and don't abuse the language, all right? There's a process. You know, if we get the people to understand, to not take away our liberties, to not take away our Christianity, we're going to be able to find a way out.
But of course, Rita, how are you going to do that? How are you going to get the people concerned enough to do anything?
You tell the guy he's not the DCI until he says who the DCI is.
Okay, fine.
The intelligence community will tell him who the DCI is. If that guy won't say that, then he's not the DCI.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Rita. Really appreciate your calling. And so anyway, Ron, we've got some real problems. And I think we've got a problem mainly as far as our general public is concerned. And one of the big problems we have is that the Christians seem to think that nothing bad is going to happen to them, or they're going to get raptured out before anything bad should happen.
You know, I go back, I think I've shared this on the program once, but back about 15 years ago, I was invited to go to a two-day seminar, and it was conducted at a church in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the speaker was a fellow by the name of Ron Sinceri, who was a state senator in Oregon, I think, at the time, and he had a ministry, I think it was called America's Christian Heritage. So I went to this seminar, and it was a two-day seminar, and he started from the money changers and Jesus Christ time, and he just trudged through history and basically showed God's involvement in the birth of and the growth of America. And then the second day he spent about 45 minutes discussing the conspiracy. And that was really intriguing because what he shared was that back in the 50s there was something called the Reese Committee that was created. And I can never remember that. Do you remember the guy's name that was appointed to conduct the investigation? But anyway, what the Reese Commission was doing was trying to study what was the collusion or what was the involvement of the tax-exempt foundations in the depression of the 20s and the growth of communism in the 50s. And so this gentleman had subpoena powers to go into the tax-exempt foundations, and the first one he went into was the Carnegie Foundation on International Peace. And apparently he went in there during the week, and I guess some young secretary was sitting there that's probably not an office that's busy all the time, and he got into their records. And in the early 1900s...
Hold that talk right there. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Ron Brown. And before we go on with this, I really want to get Ron's telephone number out and website so people would know how to get in touch with you. Do you have a website, Ron?
No, I don't have a website.
All right, fine. Well, that gets your telephone number out.
Anyone like to call and chat with me about gold and silver or whatever, my number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
Okay, fine. And so, but then, of course, Ron was simply talking about the fact that there was the Congressional Committee hearings, and these were back in 1953, 1954, and I actually had an opportunity to interview Norman Dodd, who is Director of Research for the Reese Committee. And if you haven't heard my interview with him, it's in our 4-tape set on secret societies. You can get that individual interview. Norman Dodd's long since gone to be with the Lord, but fascinating information, and he tells about how when he was in charge of the research for the Reese Committee, he sent a woman, and I think her name was Catherine Carlson, to the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace to go through their records and find out what they were really doing, and he wanted to know what they were doing back in 1908 or 1909, and actually the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace let her go through the records, and what she found out was that in 1908 and 1909, before the Carnegie Endowment was even incorporated, the members of the board of this Carnegie funded organization were planning on how they could change the world, and they decided the best way to change the world was through war. And then from 1909 to 1910, they began planning on how they were going to be able to get the United States into a world war. an amazing story. And, of course, we have so much other information to corroborate the fact that the World War One was planned long ahead of time. Just as if you study World War II, you find that was planned long ahead of time. Just as you're watching what's going on today, you suddenly become aware of the fact that we are moving rapidly towards World War III. Well, anyway, right now we have a... Did you have anything you want to say about that, Ron, before we go
to support the statement you were making... They said we need to do three things to so alter life in America. And one was to, one, get control of the State Department. That's, of course, when they started the CFR. Secondly, they said we need to rewrite. They had to create their own historians to do it. But the third thing that backs up what you were talking about, they said we need to get control of the seminaries and teach a new theology. And basically they were saying, Christians, you're going to be raptured out of this. Politics is too dirty for you, so you just stay out of it and be cool. And that's basically when the whole Christianity started staying out of politics, and that's why they're just lukewarm and doing nothing to fight what's coming down in America.
Well, of course, one of the most interesting things is the way that they have been pushing this idea of Romans 13. Oh, you read Romans 13, no matter how corrupt and how terrible our government is, they can kill all the people they want to, but we have to support them because that's what it says in Romans 13.
Right.
And I would simply say to our listeners, we have a wonderful book written by Pastor Erwin Lutzer, who's the senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church in Chicago. His book is Hitler's Cross. And we carry the book. We think it's very important. And he tells you how Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party used the Christian Church in Germany. And what did they do? Why, they did just what they're doing in America today, telling the ministers to preach from Romans 13. You preach from Romans 13 and you keep the Christians in line and, you know, you leave government to us. And that's exactly what happened. 90% of the ministers went right along with the Nazi Party. And I saw Germany after the Second World War. And I saw the rubble and the graves of so many hundreds of thousands of people who died needlessly because they did not take a stand for righteousness. Well, let's go to Paul, who's calling in from Ohio. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm calling from Ohio, the sheep old capital.
From whereabouts?
Ohio.
Ohio. Go ahead. Okay.
And I wanted to ask Ron, is he the one that has a little show on Sunday night sometimes?
You don't have a show on Sunday night, Ron?
No.
Okay, so that's somebody else.
Oh, I wanted to say that it's really... It shocked me that there was no clashes, that hundreds of thousands of Americans didn't get out in the street, you know, and to try to save our jobs so that we can buy some gold and silver from Ron Brown. But, you know, the senator said, well, be our guest and come over here and just take what jobs you want, and we don't care about these people. They'll be 75th class citizens, whatever we want them to be, I guess.
I think our listeners really should go up to Senator Sessions' website and read his various speeches. And think back, his speech on the 19th of May on the immigration bill is the most disturbing one. In fact, we're putting together a syllabus that's going to have that speech and the analysis of the legislation from the Heritage Foundation. This is the most frightening legislation. Now, apparently it's been amended down, so we're only going to have somewhere between 60 and 100 million new arrivals in this country in the next 20 years. But, you know, basically they were talking about 200 to 300, at least 200 million people coming in. We're probably going to keep it down to 100 million, but that is certainly going to transform America. And the people are going to be able to come in. They're going to be able to bring in their parents who will become eligible for Social Security. They can bring in their brothers and sisters and their adult children and their families. And once we've unlocked the gates, why they're going to be coming in, 60% of the people in Nicaragua would like to come to America. 70% of the people in Peru recently were surveyed, they'd like to come to America. As Jay Leno said, you know, a recent poll in Mexico showed that 60% of the Mexican people wanted to come to America, and the other 40% are already here. Anyway, anything else, Paul? Anything else, Paul?
I wanted to ask you, how can I get a copy of that Stephen Rockefeller and Gorbachev and George Soros, or whoever it was that had that
You're talking about the Earth Charter. Well, first of all, do you have access to a computer?
Library.
All right, so you can go up there and just go to Google and type in Earth Charter and it'll come up. If you cannot find it, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we'll send you a copy. Of course, it's included in our talk on the financial tsunami, and it's included in our sustainable development syllabus. But we'll be glad to send you a copy of it. We want you to get it. We want you to copy it. We want you to show people that there is an organized plan for the equitable distribution of wealth, not only within our nation, but between nations. And that's why we have this globalization. That's why we're sending our factories and our jobs overseas.
Dr. Stan, how can we keep it from getting down to every man for himself?
We're going to have to just realize it's a spiritual battle, and we're going to have to remain true to the Lord, but we're going to have to educate others and try to get the Christians to realize that they bear responsibility for what's happening, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And I don't think God wants us to sit back. I think he wants us to be involved.
Well, I'm staying in the battle, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much.
God bless, and thanks very much, Paul. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown. And, of course, Ron, I want you to get your telephone number out one more time, or maybe twice right now.
Okay. I put out some material on gold and silver and what's going on with the economy. So if anyone would like a free package, just call me at 1-800-595-0561. Again, that's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And so I think that right now gold and silver have backed off. I really think that this is being manipulated by the international financiers. We know that there are tremendous numbers of shorts, you know, in both the silver and the gold market. And, of course, when you sell short, you know, you're selling many times things that you don't have. There are far more shorts in silver than there is silver in the world. And that old adage that he who sells what isn't his'n has to give it back or go to prison, well, that really serves every other person, except in the gold and silver market, when our government and the central banks and the U.S. Treasury and the Fed all conspire to drop the price of gold and silver, and that's really what's happening. And the people, of course, who go long, of course, really get fleeced in this. But one of these days, why, the market is going to take hold, and when it does, why, I think the sky's the limit. What are your thoughts, Ron?
Oh, absolutely. The whole thing's unraveling, and the key to it is not to leverage. And, of course, people get caught up with gold fever and getting rich quick, and they try to go into the futures market and trade these markets on high leverage. And, you know, how can you succeed at that when the whole market is being manipulated and, you know, your charts do you no good if overnight the bankers can come in and dump billions and billions of dollars of paper, silver, or gold into the market to drive the price down? And that's exactly what's happening. But if people would just buy the real gold and the real silver, buckle their seatbelt and hang on, because this is going to be a wild ride. The powers to be are desperately, desperately trying to hold together a failing system, and that is this dollar system. And they will pull every trick and every dirty trick out of their hat they can to manipulate the price and keep as many people as they can from waking up to the reality of what's happening.
Well, I think, of course, the interesting thing is that they would be able to continue doing this indefinitely if the United States was alone in the world. They could, you know, do this and keep this going indefinitely if it weren't that a growing number of people are becoming very disillusioned with our leadership. And there are a lot of people in the world who do not want globalism. There are rulers out there who do not want to give up their power. So they're going to fight this system, and of course some of these people, like some of the people over in Arabia, Saudi Arabia there, the various countries there along the Arabian Peninsula, certainly many people in Pakistan and Egypt and in Turkey, these people don't want to go along with our plan. They want to have an opportunity to determine their own destiny. So I think we're going to see growing opposition to America's plan for predominance and preeminence throughout the world. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. The world is trying to get out of their dollars. And, you know, just two examples. Back before Christmas, Russia announced that they were going to double their gold reserves, which means they were going to sell dollars to buy gold. which puts a tremendous upward pressure on gold, which we've seen happen. It's gone from 500 to 728 bucks at the high here 2 weeks ago. At the same time, the dollar's gone into a tailspin. So as the world starts to jettison and get out of their dollars and seek the refuge of gold and silver, it's going to start to accelerate very quickly, because Russia, in terms of the world holding dollars, is small potatoes compared to a China and an India and a Japan. So if they can upset the apple cart, then you can imagine what's going to happen when everyone starts to run for the exits.
And, of course, when the central banks of some of these other countries say, we're not going to play the game any longer. We're going to go our own way because we want to protect our own economy. We want our reserves. We want our currency to be used, you know, for barter throughout the world. And as that happens, why, America's preeminence is going to be challenged, and we're no longer going to be able to force people to accept our currency. And there are literally billions and trillions of dollars out throughout the world. There are well over about $11.5 trillion out there. And behind that is an actual currency, about $700 billion. So there are $11.5 trillion, but it's all paper entries. It's all paper. It's imaginary. It's banking entries. But there's very little actual currency behind that. And the currency that we do have has very little gold backing. We have probably have, I calculated somewhere in the neighborhood of about, $60 billion in gold, something like that. And when this whole thing begins to unravel, why, we're going to be in real trouble. And I don't think anybody has any idea what happens when the currency in a nation loses value. But we saw that in Russia back in the 1900s. We saw that, I should say, in the 1990s. We saw that in Argentina, certainly about 3 years ago. And the people lost two-thirds of the value of everything they had. If the dollar falls to 60 on the exchange, why, an awful lot of Americans are going to lose, you know, at least half to two-thirds of the value of all of their savings. People can't imagine that happening. It could never happen in America. Maybe it's going to take something like that, Ron, to really get people concerned.
Yeah, and of course, if the dollar were to go to 60, then the GMs of the world would be going into total bankruptcy. That would just spread across the whole economy, and you'd see us go into a 29-style banking panic. And right now, of course, they're just running the printing press to keep us from going into a deflationary depression. But if the dollar loses that kind of value overnight, then you can see the whole thing start to just unravel very quickly. You know, the point I'd want to make is these things build, and they go slowly and slowly. I mean, just look at gold and silver the last 5 years. Started off from 250, and it would go up $20-$30, and it'd beat it back down. It'd stay down for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And if you had a $10 range in the price of gold in a day, that was violent 2-3 years ago. Now you're starting to see 50, and pretty soon you're going to see gold up and down $100 in a day, because this thing is just going to start going faster and faster, and it's just going to go into a panic situation in the not-too-distant future. You can just see it happening and building very quickly.
Well, I think that people really have to pretend to protect themselves and, of course, diversify. Do not get into one specific thing. I think the more things that you're in, why, the better off you'll be. But get out of dollar-related instruments, and this is your annuities, your bonds, certainly your CDs, anything that's tied to the dollar, bank accounts. I mean, people, you know, I can remember stories about people who are having fabulous amounts of money in Germany back in the 1920s, and, you know, and they didn't trust the banks. They kept in their mattress. They have a million marks. That was a fortune. Until one day, of course, the mark lost all of its value. And these people who thought that they had so much wealth based in paper money woke up one morning to find themselves penniless in a nation in chaos. And it was, of course, out of that chaos that Adolf Hitler came to power.
Absolutely. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see basically that's where we're going. The problem we have in America is that we've been the kingpin. We've been the top currency in the world for the lifetime of generation, so they don't think it can possibly happen in America.
But I think the other side does. In fact, we know that they've given Halliburton over $400,000 to build detention camps here in America in cases of civilian unrest. I've checked this story out from several sources, and I believe it is probably true, with both Joyce Riley and with Alex Jones, that they actually have invited some ministers, FEMA has invited them, to come to meetings telling the ministers that they will have to, you know, when things get bad, when the crisis situation comes, whatever it may be, it is going to be their job to keep the Christians in line. And not to let them get upset or to object to what the government's doing, and to preach Romans 13 to them. And that was specifically said. And Joyce has actually interviewed one of the ministers who had been to these programs, and so has Alex. And, of course, with the idea that the government is going to use Christianity to push their political agenda, does that bother you at all? If it doesn't, why, you really need to read Erwin Lutzer's book, Hitler's Cross, available through Radio Liberty. We'll tell you later how to get that book. Well, Ron, we've got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program. I really believe that we are in fascinating economic times. I think that the economy is just sort of clinging, you know, and the only thing that's really keeping it going, as you say, is the massive printing of money today, and that's why they're not longer issuing a report on M3. They don't want the American people to realize that they're massively expanding the monetary supply, and as a result, of course, they're destroying the value of people's life savings.
You know, Dr. Stan, I was just getting started in the gold and silver business back in January of 79, when we had the last blow-off. And I remember when I got into it, I was a zealot. I was so convinced that our country was heading into trouble. We were going to go into an inflationary blow-off, and that gold and silver were the ways to protect yourself. And so I was like a voice in the wilderness. I would volunteer to speak to any civic club that will allow me to speak, and I've always hated public speaking, but I've felt so strongly about it that I just did everything I could to wake as many people up. And silver started that year at $5, and I was begging people to get into gold and silver, and by April, you know, 3 months later, silver had hit $8. And the same people I begged to buy silver at $5 said, gosh, Ron, we should have listened to you, but it's too late now, it's just going up too fast. And I said, no, it's going much higher. And then by May, it was at $11, and so forth. But the point I want to make is that the people I was begging to buy silver at $5, begging them to buy it at $8, begging them to buy it at $11, begging them to buy it at $15, by the time silver hit 30, going to 50, those very same people who wouldn't buy it all the way back then were scrambling and knocking my door down to buy silver and gold, because at that point they finally woke up to what was happening. And so I would just encourage people that see, you know, you have to really stick your head deep in the sand today to not see what's happening in America, the inflation of the currency, the deficit spinning out of control, gold and silver is starting to go through the roof. Get on board now and protect yourself. Don't let all your life savings get wiped out overnight. And that's what's starting to happen very quickly.
And I would reiterate one thing. Don't think you're going to get rich. Maybe you will, but chances are you won't. But at least you'll protect what you have. And, of course, if you don't look after yourself, who's going to? Certainly we're going to maybe eventually have to put all of our faith in the Lord. But I believe he expects us to use our intelligence. We're entering difficult times. We're entering a period of chaos and crisis. They're building detention camps in America today. Ron, we're out of time. God bless you, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next month.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, a couple of things are brought to mind by our talk tonight. Erwin Lutzer's book, Hitler's Cross, is such an important book. You need to understand what happened in Hitler's Germany to be able to interpret the things that are going on in America today. Hitler's Cross, written by Erwin Lutzer, is must reading. And remember, they were encouraging ministers to preach Romans 13 in Hitler's Germany, just like they are encouraging ministers to preach Romans 13 today. Is there any similarity? I think there's a great deal of similarity. We talk about concentration camps, and people said that could never happen in America. And I would like to suggest that you should get our 4-tape set on concentration camps. In fact, we have a concentration camp special that has videos and actually has the amazing clips in it, that, and you'll actually hear the congressional hearings, the Iran-Contra hearings, when Congressman Jack Brooks is trying to ask Oliver North, Colonel North, about a plan that he had developed when he was in the White House to suspend the Constitution and arrest people or put people into detention camps. And, of course, Senator Inouye would not allow that. You need to see this. And then, of course, Congressman Gonzalez, who for many years headed the House Banking Committee, saying, you know, the only person who really came close to the truth was Congressman Jack Brooks, because there really is a plan in case of a national emergency to suspend the Constitution and, of course, begin arresting people. So you need to get the amazing clips. You'll actually see this with your own eyes, and you have to help us get the information out. That's either the 4-tape set on concentration camps or the amazing clips, the three videos there in that set. Or, of course, you can get the concentration camp special where you get so much of this information. And then your job is to try to reach other people and let them understand what's going on. You probably will want to get my talk on the financial tsunami. And, of course, we actually have a syllabus that goes with that. And so you can get the DVD, or you can get the DVD and the syllabus together. You need to be able to understand what's going on, and you need to be able to discuss this intelligently. And so we do hope that many of you will give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We need your help to get the truth out across America. And again, our website is www.radioliberty.com. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there listening across America will decide you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because, quite frankly, we need your help to be able to continue being on so many of these stations. If you'd like to get a free copy of our catalog, if you'd like to get a free newsletter, if you'd like to get our medical catalog, and, of course, the regular catalog has everything in it that the medical catalog does, except the various health products that we carry. But give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for America, pray for revival, and pray for Radio Liberty. And please remember to pray for me. I'm going to be giving a talk tomorrow morning at first thing at 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30 over at the Conspiracy Conference. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.